Hello and welcome to another exciting and jam-packed episode of Modern Day Philosophers. I am your host. I'm Danny Lobel. Thank you very much for tuning into the show. Thank you for everybody who wrote in last week to thecomical at yahoo.com. All the feedback on the Carl Reiner episode was just overwhelming and wonderful, and I'm still replying to those emails. So thank you for doing that. And anybody who's donated to the show, I can't tell you enough times how much it means to me and how much it is what I rely on to live on. So please, if you can, make a donation at moderndayphilosophers.net. There's a donate button there. And if you make a donation of $20 or more, I will send you some Tweaked Audio earbuds in gratitude. Compliments of the good people at tweakedaudio.com. Now, this week's show is brought to you by a fantastic podcaster who listens to this show and had me on his podcast. His name is Michael Andrula. His podcast is called Michael Andrula Live. And he listened to the Larry Miller episode, and he invited me to come on his show, and he said, I don't like hearing that you and the guest are hot. I am going to sponsor an episode, and I hope you use the money to get an air conditioner for the upstairs, and I will do exactly that. I thank you very much, Michael Andrula, and I'm sure every future guest of mine will thank you as well. So go check out Michael Andrula Live. I'm looking at his feed right now. He has a lot of great guests on his show. I see he just had Jimmy Schubert on his show, a fantastic comedian, and he talks a lot about fitness on his show because he owns a gym. It looks like a really, really great show, and I can tell you from being on it that it was a wonderful experience, and the guy is a great interviewer. So again, go to Michael Andrula Live and check that out. Now, my guest today is Reggie Watts. I've been friendly with Reggie Watts for a long time. We kind of lost touch, but we catch up on this episode, and it's a great talk. You might know him from Comedy Bang Bang, the podcast, or the show on IFC. And, well, I don't need to tell you anymore because here he is. Without further ado, my talk with the wonderful Mr. Reggie Watts. Enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Modern Day Philosophers.
Modern Day Philosophers.
Having failed to pay attention in school, Danny Lobel, now older and wiser, will attempt to learn basic philosophy 101. Our young hero will be joined by today's top comedians, philosophers all their own. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Danny Lobel.
Modern Day Philosophers.
All right, let's start the show.
Okay.
Intro music.
Very professional.
Thank you. Sounds good. That's good.
Yeah.
And rolling tape.
Tape rolling. Confirmed.
Cue guest.
Guest cued.
Initiate host. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Modern Day Philosophers. I am here in the studio, in the Lobel House Productions studio upstairs with my friend Reggie Watts. How are you?
Should be good. Space, a little spacey, but good.
Me too. I'm a little spacey. It's something in the air today.
Yeah. Kevin Spacey.
Maybe it's the smog. I think in LA, there are smogier days where it's hard to think because the smog gets in there.
Smog. Yeah, smog. Not good. But my favorite. But it's still my favorite. It's smog. I love it.
You like it?
Yeah, it's what I want to move to LA for. Smog. New York's pretty low on the air quality, worst air quality list.
Oh, really?
But I think LA is number one.
We have the worst air quality.
I think so, of the major cities in the United States, I think.
What do you think it is? Do you think it's all the cars, or do you think it's just maybe something in the earth emitting something?
I definitely think it's probably the geography, like the situation, all the hills and stuff, and then the temperature and the climate, and then shitloads and shitloads of cars. So it's just like keeps everything, all the smog just stays nestled, like the mountain ranges and stuff.
And New York, a nice breeze takes it
always,
away.
Yeah, there's always a breeze. That's the advantage.
I'm surprised they don't have some kind of a smog suction device where they could just suck all the smog into a big Dr. Seuss-like contraption.
Oh, that would be great.
And then
transform it into maybe some kind of fertilizing agent or something like that.
Yeah.
For crops.
You're a mellow guy.
Yeah.
Is it tough to try and stay mellow?
I mean, sometimes I can be fairly hyper, but mellow's not that. It's not that hard to achieve. Sometimes I take on the energy of other people, and that can be frustrating.
Just by being around them.
Yeah. Just by being around them, you can feel like stress, and you can feel like anxiety.
Sure.
Or you start to project. Things that you think that they're feeling or things that you think that they're, it's just a chemistry thing with some people, but that's okay. It's It's something I need to figure out too.
Well, I mellowed out when you got here, so that's good. I'm probably taking on your energy.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah.
But I wonder whose energy is stronger. Like if I now I wonder if I raised my energy, I raise your energy, or is your energy so strong that I would have to be forced to mellow down?
Well, I mean, the only thing going against that happening is just that, I'm so, because the TV show films so much that I'm tired almost all the time. So it's there's a physical factor too. But it could happen.
So now I have to see if I could do something so extraordinary in the next few minutes that I can break you out of being tired and then put you in a zone where I might be able to manipulate your energy.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's definitely something to shoot for. Yeah, I mean, in general, in life.
Yeah, you got to throw challenges your way.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
Keeps things interesting.
That's what it's about, man.
Things are good with the girlfriend.
Yeah, she's cool. She's a badass choreographer, dancer.
Nice.
And she has a dance company in New York, and they throw really cool events and parties and, spectacles. She's really, really awesome. Super smart, awesome.
Beautiful. Did you meet her through music?
No, I met her through theater. I was doing a theater piece, and she was in my theater piece as a kind of like a, I don't know what you'd call her, kind of a stage hand, like a live stage hand, but also a dancer and a choreographer at a moment. But most of the time, she's dressed like a thief, just a black mask, you know, whatever you call those things, pull down robber's mask, and then all black. Everything was all black. So yeah. She's kind of a secret weapon in the show, but that was like a long time ago.
A thief that stole your heart.
A thief that in the night, usually they were at night, and the show was at night. Yeah, so I guess she did. Yeah, she did.
That's pretty cool. Was that part of the allure, the thievingness of it?
I don't know. I mean, no, not really. Mostly she was super attractive.
That's good.
And really cool. Great sense of style. Really awesome sense of style and super duper smart, really smart. So
those are all good things to.
It's a killer combination. You can't lose.
Can't lose with that. What kind of things outside of show business do you like to do?
Well, I love going to movies. I love watching dumb TV shows. I like going to restaurants that serve really good food.
What's your favorite kind of restaurant?
Well, on average, I would say New American. Just like the cuisine there.
What is New American?
New American's like, you know, basic foods like poultry and beef. And it's like stuff that your grandparents might have made.
That sounds like old America.
Yeah, like old America. Like it's like old America, but there's a twist because there's oftentimes new takes on old classics. Like, you know, like we've all seen like the artisan chocolate with bacon in it, you know, it's like that type of a thing, or some kind of a rustic bread served with a white bean stew, you know, with kale in it, I don't know, like some kind of a burger that's like, you know, grass-fed beef, local, with some Stilton cheddar, but then they'll put some caramelized something on it, and I don't know. It's like basic foods, but they're just really high end with a slight twist.
It's like what your grandma used to make if your grandma was a gourmet chef.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Yes. That's pretty much it. That's perfectly described.
New America.
Yeah.
You've done a lot of stuff since last time we've spoken. Mm-hmm. How has your life changed now with success?
Not a ton. I don't worry about paying bills as much as I used to, which is nice. Now I invest in my friends' projects, you know, or help my friends out if they, you know, they need something, or, you know, fund a project that someone's really into, or yeah, I like helping people out. So I help people out a lot. But I don't know. Other than that, I guess there's just a few more people that maybe might recognize me on the street and ask to take a photograph. But
do you like it? Do you like the fame?
You know, up to a certain level, I think. I think any more than what I have now, I think would be harder to manage. But, you know, it seems to be pretty stabilized now, which is good. So it's not, yeah, it's not crazy. It's not crazy. So that's good.
Are there any downsides?
It's hard with a girlfriend, like, because you can't get very far, and then there's like someone always, like, you know, asking for something, or you're like eating, you know, and talking, and someone will come up, and which I think is kind of like kind of a terrible time to approach somebody. You're obviously entrenched in conversation, eating dinner or lunch is kind of
right.
I mean, I understand people are excited, but I kind of draw the, I usually say I'm eating, but maybe afterwards, you know.
Yeah. But that's nice. That's a nice way to handle it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of a nice rule. But yeah, it can get in the way of like just having normal interactions with your friends, or like trying to, you know, give attention to your friends, and there's people like asking for other forms of attention, which is fine, and which, you know, you can't bitch about, because that's what, if you put yourself out there, then you might expect something like that to happen. So you can't get too bummed about it. But it's definitely, sometimes I'm like, oh boy, I just want to hang out with my friends, you know. So
it's a good attitude.
Yeah.
All right, so let's jump into the philosophy. You ready for it?
The philosophy. Yeah, let's do it.
The guy who Alex picked out for you is a man named John Cage. You heard of him?
Oh yeah.
What do you know about him?
I don't know a ton about him. He, when I went to Cornish College of the Arts in Seattle, he had done a lot of pieces there. He had some kind of affiliation with Cornish. But yeah, he kind of revolutionized that idea of kind of minimal, atmospheric music, you know, a lot of prepared piano stuff, and yeah, just kind of like negative music.
Well, that's what the connection that Alex had for you was the musical connection.
Oh, cool.
He said John Cage wrote the piece 433. Have you heard of 433?
I don't know if I've heard 433.
Where a performer sits without playing for 4 minutes and 33 seconds.
Yeah.
He says this is because nothing exists in a vacuum. There is ambient sound going on around the performance, which becomes part of it. From this, he concludes that there is no such thing as silence. Music does not have to be semiotic or fancy. I don't know the word semiotic.
Semiotic, I'm not sure, too. Semiotic. Well, I can look it up.
Okay. This isn't silence while you look it up. It's ambient noise.
Semiotics is the study of meaning-making. Meaningful.
So music doesn't have to be meaningful.
Yeah.
Or fancy. I never heard that term for music. Oh, that's some fancy music.
Yeah, it's fancy music. It's like, oh, I love fancy music. Fancy me this.
Please dress appropriately. Tonight we'll be playing some fancy music.
Oh, that's nice.
Music does not have to be semiotic or fancy. It can just be what it is. Sounds. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you a little bit about the life and times of John Cage.
Okay. Nice.
John Cage was born John Milton Cage Jr.
Nice.
You like it?
Yeah, it's good so far.
He should have stuck with that.
It's a pretty good, yeah, it's like Ray Parker Jr. Yeah.
He lived from September 5th, 1912 to August 12th, 1992. So he died fairly recently.
Yeah.
He was an American composer, a music theorist, a writer, and an artist. A pioneer of indeterminacy in music. What is indeterminacy in music? Just it's not determined?
Yeah, I think it's just not determined. Like, yeah, like just leaving things open to not having an outcome, fixed outcome.
Electroacoustic music and non-standard use of musical instruments.
Yep.
Cage was one of the leading figures of the post-war avant-garde. Critics have lauded him as one of the most influential American composers of the 20th century. He was also instrumental in the development of modern dance. So maybe there's a connection to your girlfriend there, too. Mostly through his association with choreographer Merce
Cunningham.
Cunningham.
Yeah.
Who was also Cage's romantic partner for most of their lives. Cage is perhaps best known for his 1952 composition, 433. That's that one again, where he doesn't play for 4 minutes and 30.
Mm-hmm.
Man, this guy really did well off doing nothing.
Yeah.
I've been trying to achieve this my whole life.
Yeah.
You know, I've not played for hours at a time, and nobody's accredited me anything for this.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah, you have to frame it.
I should try and beat him.
Yeah, you could. You could do it.
I'll do a concert where I don't play at all.
Yeah, 44, maybe 437.
Oh, man, he's so much better than John Cage.
Mm-hmm.
He sat there in ambient noise for the entire time. He never even touched the keys.
He didn't do anything.
It's almost as if he has no musical talents at all.
I know. I don't know. But does he not?
But that can't be. How would he have booked the theater?
That's Schrodinger's musician.
Which is performed in the absence of deliberate sound. Musicians who present the work do nothing aside from being present for the duration specified by the title. What do you think about his theory that silence is in itself part of the performance?
I think that's true. I mean, you know, yeah, for sure. I mean, music is mostly about space. So, you know, the idea of allowing space that usually defines or kind of frames the musical actions or things that are occurring musically, and highlighting that and erasing all the actual notes and things, it's cool. It's philosophically interesting, and it's good. It's a good use of experimentation.
He says the content of the composition is not 4 minutes and 33 seconds of silence, as is sometimes assumed, but rather the sounds of the environment heard by the audience during the performance.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the lack of the performance, which is the performance. It's just what you'd hear if you went to a concert and you weren't hearing anything.
Yeah.
And that's its own sound, I guess.
Definitely.
I wonder if it's a much different sound than if it was a stand-up show and they didn't talk for 4 minutes and 33 seconds. It would probably sound quite different with that audience.
Well, yeah, the audience would probably chime in a lot more.
Yeah. The work's challenge to assumed definitions about musicianship and musical experience made it popular and controversial topic both in musicology and broader aesthetics of art and performance. Musicology, I guess, being the study of music?
Yeah, yeah, straight up.
Have you ever been to a musicology class?
I don't know. I mean, I've been to listening classes, and I guess that's a form of musicology. Yeah, it's definitely, yeah, the study of musics. So, yeah, I mean, I think anybody who listens to music essentially is a musicologist.
Do you consider yourself more a musician or a comedian, or does it matter?
Probably a musician. I kind of equate myself to both. Yeah, I like both. Yeah, I do both.
Is there one you feel more at home in or than the other?
It depends. I mean, I think I have more experience with music in general. Comedy, I have like 2/3 the amount of experience that I have with music.
Do you find they overlap a lot, like comedy and music, in terms of beats, in terms of rhythm?
Yeah, definitely. It's, you know, time, tone, texture, cadence, all of the things that describe music totally describe verbal expression.
Do you think you can put a tune to any comic's act if you listen to it enough? Do you think you'd know what that would sound like in music at this point?
I mean, I think that there's moments where you could, there are moments in people's sets that definitely have a rhythm that you could do something with, but I mean, in general, it's kind of arrhythmic. It's like there's cadences and there's like pauses and things, but it's not really metronomic. You could definitely do some kind of ambient music piece to someone doing stand-up for sure.
I think we were talking a little bit about Rodney Dangerfield downstairs. When he definitely had a real rhythm to his joke. Like, yeah. you could feel it, you know?
Yeah.
And there are guys like that. And then there are people, I think, who are maybe less rhythmic.
I mean, there are people that just have ways of, they can speak in a way that really affects people. Like, they know how to kind of wait and let things happen, like punchlines happen, you know, at the right timing and things like that. It's not so much music as just like kind of a intuitive strategy or something like that.
When did you start in music?
When I was 5, I guess, studying piano. Yeah, till 16, I think.
Do you come from a musical family? Is that part of the criteria?
No one in my family does any kind of art at all.
You get musical writer's block?
I don't know. I mean, everything's on stage, so I can't really have writer's block. I have to keep going. So,
right.
Yeah, I just have to figure out something, do something.
Have there been breakthrough moments for you musically?
I mean, on stage for sure. Yeah, definitely. I've done some things I've never done before, or things that I've only imagined, you know, I could do. Yeah, it's. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it happens from time to time. Not that often, but once in a while.
Well, you have brothers and sisters?
I don't.
You're an only child.
Mm-hmm.
See how I put that together?
Mm-hmm. It's rare that people get that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do your parents do?
My mother was a house cleaner for the Air Force Base. She was a housing contractor or whatever, cleaning contractor. And then my dad was in the Air Force, and then he retired when he was, I think, maybe 40-something.
So did he get her the job?
I don't know if he did. I think, I actually don't know. I think she just applied and wanted to do it.
Was he in the Air Force first?
Yeah.
Or they didn't meet because she was cleaning and he was an Air Force guy?
No, they met and she was in France and he was decommissioning an Air Force base on the border of France and Germany.
Is she French or she was just in France?
She's French.
Oh, so you're half French.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew that. That changes the whole interview.
I know. Everything's different now.
Yeah. Do you go to France much?
On occasion, yeah. I'm not like super, super close with my family over there, but I do visit them. I've had some gigs in France in the past, and I'll definitely come by and say hi to my cousins or invite them to a show or something.
Do you speak French?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I mean, you know, I can get by for sure. If I spent more time over there, I'd get better at it. But yeah, I do okay.
Do they have new French restaurants in France, like New American here?
They probably do. They just don't call it that. They just call it a new restaurant in France. Yeah, maybe they do. I don't know. I've had some really amazing meals in France for sure.
They got good food out there.
Yeah, they're not bad at it.
So did you grow up on an army base?
No, it was an Air Force. It was the Air Force base.
That's what I meant, an Air Force.
Maelstrom. No, it didn't. We never lived on base. We always lived in our own house outside of
the
base.
Did you ever get to go into the fighter jets as a kid or anything?
During the air shows, you get to sometimes like get close to an SR-71 or like, you know, sit in the cockpit of a Talon or something like that, like some really mellow. Or go inside of tanks and things like that. But it's, yeah, during air shows, you could see a lot of stuff. It was pretty cool.
And are you close with your parents?
Yeah, I'm close to my mom. My dad passed away 6 years ago, I think.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, it happens. But, yeah, so it's just my mom now. But she still lives in the house I grew up in.
Where was that?
Great Falls, Montana.
No kidding. So she went from France to Montana?
Yeah.
That's a change up.
Yeah, France Tana. Yeah. Yeah. Not the most usually put together locations in the world, but it happened.
So going back to John Cage, Cage was also a pioneer of the prepared piano, a piano with its sounds altered by objects placed between or on its strings or hammer. So that's just a messed up piano. Mm-hmm. Somebody fucked with the piano, that's all that is. For which he wrote numerous dance-related works and a few concert pieces. The best known of those was Sonatas and Interludes. Well, this guy's cool. He did some pretty out there stuff with music, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah, he was cool. He was very experimental. Cool guy, yeah.
And it's interesting that he was in your college that you...
Yeah, yeah, he did some work there. I can't remember. I think it's because the school was started by Nellie Cornish, who is kind of part of the Martha Graham School of Modern Contemporary Dance.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is out there music. This isn't the regular stuff, which is kind of a good connection to you because what you're doing is not necessarily mainstream. So,
yeah, no, definitely not. It's definitely more in the realm of, it's like I'm a kind of a comedic performance artist that gets to do stuff in the world of comedy. So that's awesome.
What attracted you to that kind of music?
I don't know. I think it just came out of necessity to be able to have a show and keep it entertaining for a long time. And me knowing about music, but you know, also liking comedy too. But the music really helps because it's something that I'm interested in. It provides a cool backdrop for me to lay something ridiculous or whatever, sincere over, you know, stupid. So, yeah, it's just another tool that can be used to create a cool performance.
Do you do other music stuff? Are you composing much? Or
no, I don't really rehearse or compose until I get to the set or I get to the stage.
So it's fully improvised?
Yeah, yeah.
You never write music and you never write songs?
No. I mean, I used to a lot, but since I moved to New York in 2003, and I just didn't do it that much. On occasion, I would, like, if someone needed a theme song or something, I'd write it. I mean, but by writing it means that I just improvised a couple of different things and chose the one that I liked the most. But yeah, but I have, like, written some stuff, like sat down and sequenced some things, and, you know, but for the most part, I just don't do that anymore. I just do everything live.
Is that just about keeping it fresh?
It's about laziness, really. It's the least amount of work. Well, I mean, my thing is, like, I just want to create the least amount of work for myself. So the least amount of work for me is not having to rehearse and not having to prepare.
It sounds like you've done a very poor job of creating the least amount of work for yourself. Well, you're one of the busiest guys I know.
Well, I mean, I have a lot of gigs and stuff like that. But yeah, if I had to rehearse for all of that, I think I would explode. Oh. So it's better that I can just, you know, improvise and know that it'll be mildly entertaining, at least.
Well, I think it's great. I don't want to make it sound like anything else. I love what you do, but
thanks.
I think about, like, guys like, you know, Tim Minchin.
Oh yeah, I just played with him last night.
So he writes his pieces, obviously. Yeah. Like, and you've never had ambition to do things like that.
Like I said, I don't have the motivation to do it. It's much easier for me to just go in the studio, lay down a bunch of stuff, you know, create something in the moment, have someone else kind of tweak it. I just like creating things quickly. I want to have time to do other things. I don't want to spend a lot of time working on stuff. So I'd rather create things that sound like I worked really hard on them, but it doesn't take that much time.
Well, I wonder why. I wonder it's got to come from something, right? Just the difference in ambition between somebody who wants to create work on in the moment or somebody who wants to work on a piece longer. I don't really believe it comes from laziness, because I don't think you're a lazy guy.
Well, it's just that, you know, when people are like, oh, we're gonna rehearse this thing, for me, I'm like, you don't really need to rehearse it. It's a pretty simple concept. We can just talk about it just before it happens and it'll be fine. Mm-hmm. But when people want to have rehearsals, I'm like, I think I'll skip out on that. But I'll be there for the show. You know, like, it's just, I feel more comfortable doing it that way when I sit down and work on something too hard. I mean, I've done it and it's been awesome. Like, if I'm making a theater piece, you just can't improvise everything. You have to design things and mm-hmm. rehearse transitions at least. What happens in between the transitions can be totally improvised. But so I don't mind building things and structuring things if it's a larger group of people working on it. But if it's like a movie or something and they're like, oh, we want you to audition. Mm-hmm. But we really want you to be on the movie. I'm like, well, then just fucking hire me to be on the movie. Why do I have to do an audition?
Right.
Like, you already know what I do. So just, and that's actually worked a few times. I'm just like, they're like, you want to come in? I'm like, no. Do you want to do this? You want to audition for this? No. Do you want to put yourself on tape? No. Okay, we'll just come by. I'll be like, yeah, okay, cool. I'll just come by.
That might be the great secret to show business. If you seem unwilling to do things, maybe people want you to do it more.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's one thing, like, you know, if no one knows you and if you're just interested in acting, mm-hmm. of course you're going to have to do the audition process is a totally expected part of things. And it also makes sense on the side of the production why they want to audition people. But if you're hiring somebody that's out there doing what they do, and there's plenty of examples of what they do already, then why would you need to, especially if it's like a small thing or whatever, like, I don't think you need to, that's up to the director. You know, it's like, that's up to the director and the writers to, like, mm-hmm. you know, to figure out how to make the best use of you. You know, now it's not my job to, like, convince them that I can be usable.
Yeah. Oh, I like that attitude. Put it on them, and I like that.
Yeah, why not? In that context, yeah.
Yeah. Going back to the melanin, is there a secret of it?
I don't know. I mean, I don't like to be stressed. I get stressed out about all sorts of things, you know, but I don't want to be, in general, I don't want to be stressed. I want to have a good time. I want to enjoy life, and I love weed, so, and I usually just do edibles. I don't really smoke that much, you know. I have a vaporizer at home, but usually my voice still gets sore after a while of, like, using it for a couple of days, and I have to, like, recover from it. And so it's not the best form of intake for me, but THC definitely helps, because sometimes I'll get stressed out about things. Mostly the things that I get stressed out about are things that impinge on my freedom. You know, like, if someone's like, you have to come in at 6:30 in the morning to be on set, you know, and you're going to be there for 12 hours and you're going to wait for, you're going to be hanging around probably for 5 hours, not doing anything. Mm-hmm. That stresses me out because I'd rather just have everything condensed and me come in for 2 hours and bang everything out. And then I'm gone. I'm out of there. And I'm like doing stuff that I want to do. And then it's fun for me to do it that way. Cause it feels more like a machine, you know, it's mm-hmm. like just attack and get it done. So, you know, so weed for me definitely helps to kind of remind me to slow down and just kind of chill out, see things from a different perspective and remember that there, it's just a, it's a reminder to me that there's another, there's always another way of viewing something.
It seems like it's the same theme of just not wanting to be tied down as what we were talking about earlier. It's gotta come from like being a kid and having your freedom taken away at some point.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's always like chores, you know, like you got to vacuum the thing or, you know, you got to do this. And there's definitely like a reward system that works, you know. It's not like I love helping out. I just don't like being it's not forced. That sounds way too harsh, but it's like just things set up in a way that you have to kind of adhere to someone's idea of what it takes to make something, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's certain people that I respect. I mean, if, you know, I don't know, J.J. Abrams was like, I want you to be in Star Wars or something like that. I would say, well, you know, I'm kind of an improviser, you know, I'd start there. And if he was like, yeah, I know. We got this cool part, you know, or whatever. It's mm-hmm. going to be, you know, it's going to be a one day thing and we'll get you in and out of there as soon as we can. But you're probably going to have a lot of fun hanging out with the set. You know, I'd be excited about that. And I would adhere to the way that he would direct. I'd be excited about that. But if it's like something that's like, you're going to be doing this for 3 months and it's going to generally be this kind of a schedule, it'll change here and there, but it'll be this kind of a schedule, that makes me anxious. And then I only have so much energy for it. And then I start to like run out of it and feel tired all the time and kind of grumpy and like kind of bitchy in a way that I just don't like to be.
Was your dad like a real military guy? Like very, you know, everything had to be very structured growing up?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, there was a lot of like discipline, you know, strictness, but I'd always figure out ways around stuff. So that's kind of like,
it's still going on today.
Still going on. Yeah. I'm always like, well, how do I get out of doing this thing, but still reap the benefits of doing it?
Yeah.
I'm always trying to engineer the best solution, protecting my creative freedom.
I think basically everybody's always trying to take our freedom away
mm-hmm.
in life. Like I constantly resent it. I feel like everything is trying to take away.
Yeah.
You know, it's a real tough task to be able to just maintain your freedom in life. And I think about people who I know who are kind of tied to a desk for their whole life and how their life has kind of been taken away from them willingly.
Yes, I know. Yeah, completely willingly. Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, you know, it's like it's so easy to kind of fall into a template, even if you feel like it's not right, the right thing for you, but it yields results. It like gets your paycheck, it pays for your bills, and you have your weekends off and you get to rage or whatever and to kind of compensate for your dislike of doing something that's kind of patterny all the time. Mm-hmm. Or you just figure out a way to live freely, you know, like you mm-hmm. try your best to like, well, I'm going to have to do without some of these comfort things, but at least I'll be free, you know.
That's what I've been trying to do.
Yeah.
I've been fighting for, I'm a freedom fighter.
Yeah, you got to fight for your right to party.
Yeah.
You know, it's like life is about enjoying it, you know, and taking care of people.
Yeah.
You know.
And then I wind up with days like the other day where I'm in Petco laying dog beds down on the floor and testing them out and thinking, maybe I should be tied to a desk. This is probably not a good use of freedom.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like, yeah, I mean, it's not easy. Either way, you're working. You're doing something. You're working in mm-hmm. life. There's no, you have to work to figure out how you're going to eat. You have to work to, you know, figure out how you're going to get proper sleep or like not get rain on you. You know, it's like the basic things. And then it kind of scales from there to all the weird micro bullshit that we have to deal with all the time.
And there's all these traps that are kind of set up for you to fall into all around you. And I can sense them. You want to get a car? This is what I've been talking about in my stand-up recently is just I feel like when I if I want to go pick up milk,
yeah,
I have to pay a Prince, you know? I have to put gas in the car, and a Prince is making money.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am sort of just trapped in this pay-a-Prince scheme, you know? It's
it's true.
There's all these traps around me that there's no getting out of.
Yeah, I know. It's like you buy into it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so I mean, there's always a way. There's another way of doing things that still yields the same end result. So the path can be different, you know. So that's the thing. It's like finding out, well, what's that path that still gets me to all the things that I love about, I don't know, Western living or something like that.
Yeah.
It's like I like using electricity. I like driving a car. It's like, well, is there a way that I can drive a car that doesn't have an impact on the environment? Is there a way that I can, you know, like my biggest pet peeve is when people have kids and like they just buy all this brand new clothing for their kids. It's like, stop fucking buying brand new clothing.
Oh, yeah.
Just like go get secondhand clothing. The kid doesn't give a fuck.
And he's going to grow out of it in a month.
Yeah. It just doesn't, don't stop it. Just stop doing that.
It's just another trap.
Yeah. It's just another like, oh no, you need this new stuff. It's like, ah, fuck that shit. That's not true.
Yeah.
It's not true at all. It's just, you know, you just need like, you know, ways to like change your behavior that make you feel like, oh, I'm conscious. I'm aware of things. I'm not just going along with the thing and having this weird kind of sense of ambient dread, you know, in the background going like, oh, what did I feel like I'm not doing something right, you know, or whatever. Or
right,
I feel a little bit trapped, you know, like whatever that feeling is, like find out what that is and, you know, make some changes if you can.
Yeah, it's tough. I think they try to scare you out of them. I think the whole system is built like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's easy because they've set it up for you. All you have to do is just pay this money. And mm-hmm. It's everything's taken care of. Like, oh, yeah, cool. There's good versions of that, but, you know, there's a lot of bad versions of that. More bad versions of that than good versions, for sure.
I think we're all just kind of worker ants, you know, and we're all really just been placed in a system that's been set up by other people for us to be taken advantage of.
Well, yeah, it's just a system. That's it. It's a system and everybody plays a part. It's just, yeah, it is like, but you know, it's structured like anything in nature would be, you know, like we organize ourselves in very similar ways that nature does. Like we're collective, but we're individual. We celebrate individualism, but we're also collective. And sometimes we get these notions of like, oh no, let's be more collective, you know, like Soviet Union or whatever, communism mm-hmm. or Marxism or, you know, yeah, socialism, like, oh yeah, yeah, it's where, you know, so and nothing's good or bad. It's like, oh, it's a democratic system. It's a capitalist, you know, whatever.
Right.
We have all these systems and they just kind of mimic different ways that nature organizes itself because we are natural. We are a natural organism. So we're going to follow all of these different ways that we think we would be better. We're always like, this will be better. No, this will be better. No, this is the way.
And then people get mad if it's not, that's... I always found communism just so funny about, you know, how America's related to communism. It's just a different system.
That's it. Yeah.
That's all it is. Oh, it's evil. And then, you know, do you like another system? No, I like this system. Oh, okay. He likes this system. I thought for a second he might like another system.
Yeah, totally. It's like, which system does he like? But, you know, sometimes the system isn't the problem. It's just the way that people wield power and manipulate the system.
Sure. So,
which will always happen because people will always want to do that.
Listen, this is the way we've agreed to be controlled.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like, well, we did agree. So, you know, you can't really blame the guy for trying to cheat everybody out of all this money. It's like, well, I could. But at the same time, I kind of understand.
All right, I got to bring it back to to Johnny Cage.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, John Cage. That's not a good transition to go back to John Cage.
It was good, John Cage, classic.
You liked it?
Say a name twice, yeah.
Oh, okay,
that's good.
That'll hook him back.
Very professional. Yeah, people will be like, oh, good.
All right, you want to read? John a little bit of John Cage, and then we'll discuss it.
Yeah, they say you mean it. It's just sounds, thinking that for something to just be a sound is to be useless, whereas I love sounds just as they are, and I have no need for them to be anything more than what they are. I don't want them to be psychological. I don't want a sound to pretend that it's a bucket or that it's a president or that it's in love with another sound. I just want it to be a sound.
So what he's saying there is basically just, you know, music without meaning, just music for the sound of...
Yeah. sound for sound's sake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's good. It's a good philosophy. It's allowing things to be what they are in their natural state, you know. But that's kind of, that's what art's about. It's like you have choices. You can either allow things to be what they are, or you can fuck with them, or you can recontextualize them, or you can mimic them, or you can, you know, erase them, or you can, yeah, whatever you want to do, you know. But it's a really a response to, you know, what he probably was exposed to all around him, what he was hearing all around him was like one thing, and then he was curious about what happens if you just think of things in this way and listen to things in this way. And it makes sense. It's like kind of need all of those elements to kind of arrive at conclusions that allow you to experiment.
Do you think a sound with a definition attached to it or a word is less pure or less organic than a sound just for the sake of itself?
Well, I mean, it's all about intent, you know? So, I mean, if someone records something or something perform or somebody performs something, then there's an intended expression, you know, that the audience is then exposed to and has to deal with. But it changes when it's like just things in nature, you know, or it's your personal journey. I love listening to sounds of like machinery or birds or water, or, you know, I love hearing just straight up sounds. They're really amazing, you know, or sometimes just listening to an audience creaking around their chairs or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but I think a lot of it has to do with what are you doing, you know, with it? Have you created a concert, you know, that you want to present an idea to people? Then that's one thing. But, you know, everything's up for grabs and day to day.
Music without any kind of lyrics is just, the idea is just pure emotion, right?
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah. I mean, it's still a form of conversation. There's still a voice and there's still a lyrical value to it, but just doesn't have the words that spell out the poetry, you know, that verbal poetry. But yeah, I mean, I guess it's definitely more emotional. Yeah. So you focus on the vibe of it.
Just like the experience of listening to Beethoven versus like Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney in his song, he's pretty much telling you what to think.
Yes.
Whereas Beethoven, it's up to you what that song means, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, at the same time, sometimes they can be very direct as to what they want you to feel like. You know, music can definitely be very, very literal. You know, if something sounds whimsical and it's got flutes in it, most people are going to think, oh, this is whimsical.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's a lot of music that, like, I love ambient music and minimal house, minimal techno, and there's like a lot of sound design in that music, and it's really beautiful composition of just sounds, you know.
It's definitely less controlled. It's more free.
Yeah, it's organized, but because it's so minimal, it gives you tons of space to arrive at your own conclusions, which is awesome.
Yeah. Well, there's so many things that I don't normally think about as somebody who just listens and consumes music.
Yeah.
Just how strong is the idea? How strong is the voice? How strong is the music behind it?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't break it down like that when I listen to a song. I just go, good song, bad song.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Well, that's kind of the end result.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like you got to come at it. It's got to come at you, and you got to, you know, you kind of know right away. It's kind of what songs are supposed to do, hopefully.
I've never heard anybody discuss a song like, well, I really love the idea of it. I often think about the difference between music and comedy and how I think people connect on such a different level with music.
Yeah.
I think that's something comedians have always been a little jealous of, is just the connection that we can't have with just thoughts, ideas, and words.
I don't know. I think it's because it's tonal. It's like a series of, you know, vibrational tones that, and it's generally rhythmic of some sort. So there's a lot, you can kind of catch it's kind of like riding it, you know, you get to ride music or experience it. And, you know, if there's a beat, your body's just moving to it naturally. It's a totally different thing, you know, and just using words and, you know, being on stage, it's definitely about projecting thoughts and ideas and, you know, misdirection and, you know, punchlines and things like that. It's related, but it's definitely not like hearing a beautiful violin line or like an amazing guitar solo or an incredible drummer. You know, it's like, right. It just, that stuff just hits you immediately on a very primal level. So they're kind of, it's not fair to compare them. They're related, but they're not really comparable.
It's also in the words used to describe music, like, oh, that's real soulful music. You'll never hear.
Right.
Oh, that's real soulful comedy.
Yeah.
And it might be. I mean, I think Richard Pryor did some really soulful comedy.
For sure. Yeah.
But I think there is definitely a strong school of thought that music speaks to the spirit.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, comedy can do that too. I mean, George Carlin was excellent at that. You know, mm-hmm. he had such a deep philosophy and he would show the absurdity of human behavior and like deconstruct, you know, kind of just status quo logical thinking, but the implications of, like, you know, the realization, his punchlines and how it made you realize how ridiculous things were, that was a very spiritual thing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He's very kind of shamanic in a way.
Do you think there is a spirit in us?
I think there's definitely what I call the experiencer and the observer, you know, and I think that the relationship between the two can create amazing results, like amazing experiences, because it's when they're vibing, when they're, like, you know, in tune with each other, it's that's what I think feels like the idea of what spiritual is. It's like when things are kind of harmonic, things are happening harmonically, and you can really just kind of let go and things seem to be running on autopilot or whatever, or it hits you and something hits you in a way where you really are thinking and feeling at the same time, a really heavy way. So I think that that's kind of what spirituality is. So I think that people, I mean, I think that that's true. It's just, it depends on how you define it, really. But
what about, like, in terms of a literal soul? Do you think we have one?
I think there's definitely something piloting the machine that we're in, the bio machine that we're in. I mean, there's kind of a, I like to think of it that way, but also I think we're also very holistic and kind of connected to the entire environment and universe. So, you know, the idea of a soul could be something that is completely total, that's everywhere, you know, or it could be, you know, something that might be localized within yourself, but I think that it's something that doesn't really exist in time or space. I think it's something that you represent and you harness and deal with.
When you talk about the oneness with the world and nature, hmm. what do you think that is? Is that God? Is that?
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, the idea of God, I think, you know, it sounds like a cop out, but I don't think it is God is like everything and nothing at the same time. You know, I think it's something that when you try to define it, it just evaporates, you know, because that's not the point of it. It's something it's a paradox, like the idea of, so I think, like, the interconnectedness of all things, God is essentially fractal, you know, in the sense that something could be infinitely small or just incredibly small or incredibly large, but they're all related. So it's all the one thing. And, like, someone that you see when you see walking down the street and you're looking at them, or if you're looking into the eyes of an ant, or, you know, or looking at a mountain range, like, all of those things are all God, you know. It's like, it's all the same thing. And it's like, who's observing all of this in the first place? It's like, it's probably something that would be described as God, because mm-hmm. everybody's experiencing, but collectively that total experience has got to be something shared. That I think that that's kind of what God could be.
So you do believe there's a grand observer?
Yeah, I mean, of sorts. I mean, I don't think it's like a person I don't think it's localized anywhere. I think it's kind of everywhere and nowhere. You know, it's like something that we can't really understand, because that's not really, there's nothing to understand. It's just to understand that there is nothing to understand is the kind of the thing.
Do you think there's a value to prayer?
I think prayer works because, you know, we disturb and can influence things around us physically, but we can also disturb things and adjust things or influence things with intention as well. And, you know, so I think, like, prayer is definitely something that, I think people have researched it a bit or whatever, but it definitely has an influence. You know, there was that Japanese guy that did the research on different glasses of water with like different messages on the water, and people were to look at the message that said hate, and then another one said love, and another one's neutral or whatever, and then kind of like somehow was able to measure the vibrational frequency of the molecular structure of water or whatever, and they were different than before they started. So I think that the idea of prayer, I think it does work, but I don't think it works in the traditional, like, I'm going to sit down and put my hands together, and it's more like hoping. It's not prayer.
It's a musical way of looking at it, Reggie. It's vibes.
Yeah, for sure.
I didn't know about the water one, but I heard about a similar experiment where plants were either spoken to harshly or sang to, and the ones that were sang to grew and flourished, and the ones that were yelled at withered and died.
Yeah. Yeah, it's harmonic, you know, intention. All of that stuff, it all, you know, whether it's verbal or thought or whatever, they're all part of the ecosystem.
Okay, so let's jump into the quotes.
Oh, no problem. There's no such thing as an empty space or an empty time. There's always something to see, something to hear. In fact, try as we may to make a silence, we cannot.
It's just more justification for him not playing.
Yeah, pretty much. He's just saying like, yeah, dude, if you don't, this is why. Here's the value of not doing that. But he's true. You know, it's he's right. Because even if you were in a sensory deprivation tank and couldn't hear anything, there's no outside sound and everything was dark, you would still see patterns and you would still hear something, like a static sound or whatever. So there is no such thing as absolute.
The hum of the universe.
Yeah, basically, or just, you know, your organs just trying to listen for something but causing some type of interference.
Right.
But, yeah.
And also just the idea of nothing being something.
Absolutely. Yeah, nothing is something, for sure. Nothing is is defined. It's like atheists, you know, and they say, like, I'm an atheist. It's like, well, you're saying that there's something that you're against. So you kind of undermine your entire philosophy. You know, if you were really an atheist, you would just like not say that you believed or didn't believe in anything.
Interesting, yeah.
You know, what's this? If something is boring after 2 minutes, try it for four. If it's still boring, then eight, then 16, then 32. Eventually one discovers that it is not boring at all.
Or you're just really bored at the end of it.
Yeah, like super bored. But you're so bored that you realize that boring is a qualitative feeling.
Right. I feel like that would never work in a pitch meeting. If you're showing somebody a pilot and everybody's like, well, you know, we had a focus group and they were all pretty bored. We'll tell them to watch it for 16 minutes. Yeah, 32.
Totally. Although, yeah. Yeah. What was that show, Bored to Death? I mean, that got on.
Yeah.
So. They did it.
Just give it another two seasons.
Yeah,
you'll see.
Yeah, exactly. You'll see that it's something. You'll see that it's something. Like, oh, okay, I guess. I don't know. Why am I watching this? This other one, wherever we are, what we hear is mostly noise. When we ignore it, it disturbs us. When we listen to it, we find it fascinating. That's true. That's totally true.
That's what you were talking about before, just listening to the sounds of machinery or nature.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, if you actually listen to it instead of get annoyed by it, it becomes something different. It's like, oh, well, there's something valuable in it, as opposed to, this is really ruining my day, you know, or this is ruining my flow, or whatever. Mm-hmm. I try to do that. I mean, sometimes, obviously, you're a human being, so sometimes things are just annoying. But sometimes, if you actually just do take a second and go, oh, that's actually kind of interesting, and just kind of lay back and absorb it, you know?
Right.
It's nice.
I hear a little wind coming in. Do you hear that? Yeah. Coming through the crack of the window?
Yeah, ghost wind.
Ghost wind. I'm going to try and focus in on it.
Yeah, ghost wind and ghost wind. It's a good name for a character. Oh, I am ghost wind. It's like, wow, you're the wind of a ghost? That's even less than a ghost. That's crazy.
I'm just the feeling that a ghost gives you when he walks by.
Yeah, totally. It's like, wow, that's so powerful. 10 times more powerful than a ghost itself.
Or less powerful, maybe.
Maybe less. Yeah. But less powerful being powerful.
Right.
Because sure. Ghosts are already trying to be pretty not there.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But as we learned today, nothing really isn't there.
That's true.
There's always something there.
Well, in the game of stealth, you know, it's the less is more.
That'd be a great argument for a medium.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing there. No. There's always something there.
Yeah, totally. Really? But that's not what I mean. Like, listen, I'm paying you. Like, oh, right. Yeah, I guess you got a point.
Do you think maybe we're just borrowed energy? Like, when we're alive, we're just borrowed from the greater energy, and then when we die, we just return to the greater energy?
Well, I mean, I think it's like kind of like a hard drive, you know? Hard drives are kind of like one unit of potential information, and then like you put stuff on it and it's just like a configuration of binary code that like has the idea of what it is, that so you can look at it again and you're like, oh, there's the thing, but it's really not the thing because it's still a part of the one thing, so it's just divided mm-hmm. inside of itself.
So the world's the hard drive and we're the binary code.
Yeah, we're just like code, you know, there's like tons of code, you know, it's everywhere around. Everything's kind of defined by a structure of sorts, you know, but there's really never ultimately a structure. It's all just perceived structure, I suppose.
Interesting. Yeah. And the difference between you and I is just a little bit of coding.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, we each have like this unique way of seeing things, but ultimately we're still participating in the same thing. Mm-hmm. So it's a weird paradox. If I think about it too much, it makes me feel weird and weirder than weird.
Yeah. And then if you meet someone you don't like, you're like, bad programming.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Non-player character. Can't stand them.
Oh, I wish I had that kind of programming. Look what he can do.
Yeah, that's I know. Great. Guy's incredible. Wow. So cool. What a cool program.
Yeah. It's. I was thinking about it today, just like Michael Jackson, how he can move.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, I guess we could all maybe move like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we all have the same skeleton.
Yeah.
He just figured out different movements of the same skeleton.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, some of us are constricted by muscle pain or
shape.
But
yes.
Basically, we could all do that. He just figured out to do it.
Yeah.
And did it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And then we said, well, that's really great. Look at how he can do that. I was like, well, you could have done that. Yeah, I didn't think of it.
Yeah, right. And I just didn't think of it.
So I think one of the biggest things that impresses people is just thinking of something they didn't think of. That's all it is. That's all comedy is. That's why people show up and they go, oh, I hope he has something that he thought of that I didn't think of.
Yeah, totally. It's like, oh, I never thought of that. Or like, or I have thought of it, but I haven't thought of it in that way.
Yeah.
Or I've thought of it, but I could never figure out how to express it. This person's done it.
Like, yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
I like the I haven't thought of it comedy better than the I thought of that kind of comedy.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's more frustrating if it's like, oh, I did something like that, but then you realize that it's done better
mm-hmm.
than you thought, or whatever better is, but like just it's more concise and it makes way more sense than like what you were trying to, how you were trying to come at it.
And then
you're like,
oh, damn it, bad programming.
Damn it. Nag-dab-it.
I'm poorly coded.
It's terrible. I wasn't coded for that joke, but there's another joke that I'm perfectly coded for and I'll find it.
Why do you keep one nail long at the end on your finger?
It actually started from seeing Penn Jillette on stage with one red nail in high school. And then I just kind of was cutting the other nails and like just kind of left that one because I thought it was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. But it's not like for music or anything.
No.
Or strings.
No, there's nothing functional about it at all. It's just ornamental.
Yeah, that's cool.
Let's see if I can...
There's only so many things we can do, you know? And growing your nail is one of them.
That's true. Oops. Growing one's nail, it's easy to do.
As a guy who is overweight, I always think, well, there's got to be something easier I could do to change how I look than losing weight.
Yeah.
What else can I do? I could grow a beard.
Yeah, right.
I could get a haircut. Hair is easy, you know?
Yeah, hair is pretty changeable. Yeah. I mean, well, in one direction. I don't know. I don't know what it would be.
it's limiting. I could wear sunglasses. I could wear fake glasses.
Yeah.
I could wear a suit. I could wear a shirt, just a t-shirt. There's not too many options. It's like,
no.
So that's another option. I could grow a nail.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no. I plan, you know, it's hard. It's a hard racket.
But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately it just comes down to like, if you're not satisfied, which is my problem, it's like, I'm like always trying like, well, I got to figure out some way out of this. But, you know, I've got some plans.
Out of what?
Just getting, being overweight. Like, it's just like, it's really, I hate it. Because it's like, I just, as I got older, my metabolism just slowed down. And I just.
Mine slowed down from the get-go. I guess in that way I'm lucky.
Well, yeah, right. You're like, this is the way I am. I don't know. I mean, as a kid, I was really chubby. And then in high school, I was like, fuck this, and started running. And then I got really skinny, and then I got chubby again, and then I got skinny when I was 27 again. And then since then, it's been just like gradually where I am today. But like, yeah, I always have plans to do it, but it's so hard, especially when you get in routines, you know,
absolutely. And
you like food.
Yeah.
It's tough, man.
So you have the advantage of having cool hair.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
That's a big advantage. I can't do that.
Well,
if I grew my hair long, it wouldn't look good. I thought of it.
Have you done it?
Yeah, I have. It never looks good. People always go, oh, you should really get a haircut.
Yeah, that would be a consensus where it doesn't look good. Yeah. Hey, man, what's going on? Hey, you should get a haircut. Hey, did you get those? I'm like, what?
I want to end in something musical. I think talking about music for so long and not giving anybody any music is kind of a letdown. Could we do something?
I could play you a track that I did that exists that I'm kind of on, but okay. Not. I'm on it, but I'm not on it. Yeah, let's see. This is the song. I'll just play a little bit of it just because I'm not really on it that much, but it's kind of like, I like it. I think it's got a good chorus. You'll hear it. I'll just play it till the chorus. It's this band Moscow Roscoe. You'll hear it, me, in a second. Song. It's just like, what the hell?
So did you improvise the lyrics there too?
I mean, I just sang a bunch of shit all over the track, you know, and then they were like, oh, okay, well, we'll make some sense of it.
That's
and
great.
They used like, you know, little oohs and whatever, weird sounds and stuff like that. It was really fun. I like it. It's a very nice, like, dancey pop song, and I just like that. But I also like it when I'm used kind of ambiently.
That's awesome. Yeah, there you go. The ambient noise.
There you go.
That's our guy. That's John Cage. The master of the ambience.
Ambiance.
There's your French.
That was my French nod to Frenchdom.
Maybe I can improvise some music with you before you head out.
Yeah.
I can do some jazz clarinet, ear jazz clarinet, and then you can do something over it.
Ear jazz clarinet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that is.
I'll give you a piece, and you can decide if it's usable.
Okay. All right. Nice, man. That sounds great.
Thank you.
Put a little bit of record crackle on that.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. This sounds great.
Thank you. Thanks for being here.
That's really amazing. Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's great.
Everybody, that's our show for today. Again, I want to thank my guest, Mr. Reggie Watts, for coming in and doing it. Go check him out on IFC Comedy Bang Bang. Thank you guys for tuning in. If you can, donate to the show. It helps a lot. Go to moderndayphilosophers.net. There's a donate button, $20 or more, and I will send you some tweaked audio earbuds, which are also available for purchase on their website, tweakedaudio.com. And if you put in promo code MDP, you'll get 1/3 off your order, plus free shipping. Okay, everybody, that's it for today. If you want to write in, thecomical@yahoo.com, I'm always very happy to get your emails. And you can also leave 5 stars and a nice comment on iTunes if you want to help me out. It would be very nice. It would be very, very nice. Please do it. It's very, very nice. All right, I got to go. I'll see you next week. Have a good week, everybody. Goodbye.